for yesterday morning. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5025, Budget of the Legislative Agencies, and we have before us our esteemed co-chairs. We're very happy to have you here this morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Peggy, do you want to start off?
Madam Chair, this is the last of the legislative agencies for public hearing. As I mentioned before, the legislative branch agencies will come back for a work session later in the session. And the last agency that we have to do is the Legislative Fiscal Office. And
okay. With that, good morning, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Len Hannon, State Senator, District 26, and it has been my privilege and honor this session to serve in the capacity with my good friend from Bend as co-chair of Ways and Means. I'd like to share with you for a brief moment my perspective on the Legislative Fiscal Office budget and recommend to you the funding packages included in the budget. This is a very important function in our legislative process, and I think this session, more so than others in the last two or three legislative sessions, Legislative Fiscal Office this session has been involved in both the Senate and House Democratic and Republican caucuses and serving in a capacity above and beyond the call of duty. They have come in and presented themselves in such a manner as not to take positions on issues, but rather as resource on the budgetary process. And I cannot sing the praises highly enough of our staff and what we have in Legislative Fiscal Office. I think that there was a way to recognize the important contribution that they provide to the process. Legislative Fiscal Office is head and shoulders above a lot of agencies in its deliberations and presentations, and the staff is certainly the best qualified people. Having said that, with Mr. Stinson retired and serving here on a limited duration in the session, and possibly having Peggy filling in as a interim legislative fiscal officer, I would highly recommend that we support her, give her the mechanism to make the transition. So that when Mr. Stinson does, in fact, fully retire, we're able to move transition-wise to a process that lends itself to the integrity and credibility that we have in this process. So with that, Madam Chair, I want to just come in and lend my support to this budget process.
I concur with your comments about Mr. Stinson and Peggy Archer. I agree with you completely with our whole telephone staff. Representative Westland.
Even those that are on loan to the Legislative Fiscal Office this session, we've had questionable presentations in the past, but their level of improvement is increasing this session. Barely, but it's increasing.
That is damned a safe phrase, man.
Yes, I think so. Well, I certainly concur with your comments, and it's hard, terribly hard work for these folks. And lots of times I call at 5:30 or 6 in the evening and later, and there are lots of us still here. So Representative Westland. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Ben Westland, State Representative from District 55, and again, it is really my privilege and pleasure to work with my fellow co-chair this session, and as such, in fact, for my entire legislative career, all I've ever been involved in is the Ways and Means process. I've worked with the office through a lot of fun projects and a lot of projects that have been extremely difficult to put together. The first thing I'd like to recognize and compliment the office on is that their mission statement, what these individuals purport to be, they truly are. And that is nonpartisan, objective, professional staff that serve the entire body and every elected member of this institution. And I point that out to differentiate between some of the policy advisors to our, in this case, my and your leadership offices with regard to salaries. The policy advisors to the leadership offices, while they are exceptionally fine and qualified people, serve those leadership offices and by definition only approximately half of the body, and yet they are paid at the same step analysis as our senior analysts in LFO. Again, I point out that the LFO analysts serve every member of this body. And I think there's a little injustice there. Not only have the analysts in legislative fiscal office been here for a number of years, and again, not to impugn or castigate the integrity or quality of the policy analysts, who are fine people and fine analysts for the policy advisors for the leadership offices, many of them have not been here as long. They are somewhat transient, and one of the key variables in the equation to produce the quality of service that the Legislative Fiscal Office has produced over the decades for this building is the ability to pay competitive salaries. And what all too frequently happens is many of the agencies that we review and they review end up, I'll use the polite phrase, borrowing on a permanent basis many of the best analysts. We've been able to stem that off for a number of years now, but if you just look at the steps and where this is kind of all heading, I could, you know, regrettably see that we may be at one of those junctures where Legislative Fiscal Office could lose some of their best people. So, just to summarize, I cannot stress how many weekends I've been down here and seen LFO analysts in at their desks. I cannot stress how many times I've been in the office past 7 o'clock, and not only was the analyst I was there to meet dutifully at his or her desk, but three or four other analysts were as well. And I say this in a somewhat humorous vein, but it's a serious comment. Not one time ever have I seen a video game or solitary game up on their computers, and I wish I could say that for the other offices that work for this institution. Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, here's a dollar I'm lending the co-chair. If he used LFO one more time, I would have choked him. He even put it in the pot there.
This is a thing that Senator Representative Butler has started, Representative Westland. You've just now contributed to the record.
Now you owe me big time.
You can buy me Jeep, buddy. Okay, I'll pay for you. I heard you say LFO.
Oh.
I was going to say if he paid you back, Senator Hannon, you'd certainly have some interest coming, wouldn't you, I would think.
Small interest check. I want my money. I wasn't paid.
Did I get on the record, Madam Chair, that all of my comments apply to every analyst except those wearing blue and white?
Yes, you did.
Okay, thanks.
I take it that there's some teasing going on here in good humor, as I know you do all appreciate. Have you ever thought of putting in legislation that the current LFO officer cannot retire?
We have several fairly draconian methods that we're going to roll out right at the end.
Well, if the stock market keeps going down, he may not be able to retire.
Okay. We've just, Senator Griggs, we just had a presentation from our co-chairs about our staff and how capable and able and hardworking they are.
Oh, we know that.
We know that.
Yes.
And we're going into discussion and questions. Any questions of our co-chairs?
Well, Madam Chair, with regards to retention of qualified personnel, we could take a chapter from the book, The Firm, by John Grisham. They were able to retain staff quite well.
Thank you, Representative Hagel.
Oh, I thought that would be helpful. Yes.
That is helpful. good morning and goodbye, I guess. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. I mean, we all know this. I think they're the hardest working group of folks in the building, and they serve us very ably. And I think this is something we've got to look at, not only for the immediate future, but long term as well.
I agree.
Thank you.
Chairs, if they want money?
Pay more money for our staff.
And we have some say over that? We should talk.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason we're here is that the governor zeroed the legislative budget out, and we're here to restore that budget
and
zero the governor's office
out. Is this kind of like a game of chess? Or
three-dimensional chess.
Three-dimensional.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
And it's our privilege to contribute.
Thank you. The American Cancer Society, thank you as well. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I too will prepay all my transgressions. It is.
If you're going to prepay all of your transgressions, Mike, you better get a bigger wall.
Or a checkbook out. Big checkbook.
It's with a great deal of pleasure and relief that I come before you to present the Legislative Fiscal Office's budget. Indeed, as has been described, the Legislative Fiscal Office is a nonpartisan, permanent, professional, statutory agency created to serve the legislature, created in 1959. It was, I think, the second of the permanent staff agencies created to serve the legislature about 2 years after Legislative Council. You will find the statutes giving direction to the Legislative Fiscal Office in ORS 173, 420 through 450. We are directed by statute to ascertain facts and make recommendations concerning the governor's budget, state expenditures, fiscal implications of organizations and functions of the state and state agencies, other matters provided for by joint or concurrent resolution, and requests for assistance from other committees or members of the Assembly. In addition to that broad directive to serve the legislature for all fiscal matters, we are also statutorily directed to be the staff of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, and directed by leadership during the interims to serve other special or standing interim committees since 1989, I think we have had one or more interim budget committees, either joint or separate, between the houses that our office has staffed. There is an organizational chart in the budget book in front of you. About page 7, you'll find the organizational chart. The Legislative Fiscal Office is staffed by 17 permanent full-time positions, 15 professional, 2 administrative support. But that is not the entire complement of staff that serve you, particularly during the sessions. As have been noted here in jest by the co-chairs this morning, and certainly not in jest by me at all, we are served during the legislative sessions for about the past, about 7 or 8 sessions We have had rotation analysts come to us during, preceding the session and during the session from executive branch agencies. Lori, sitting behind you this morning, is one of our two rotation analysts this session. These folks allow us to stretch our resources during the legislative session significantly. Not only do they come only during the session, but they come actually with their agencies paying half of their salaries. So we pay 50% on their salaries, get 150% of their effort, and it's a way that we're able to further provide resources to support you. In addition, during the session, we have five support positions that serve your subcommittees and also serve the scheduling function and the reception function in our office. All those individual positions that I mentioned, the support positions, are actually carried in the Legislative Administration Committee budget under committee services. We've asked agencies to come before you with the outline this session and discuss performance measurements for their agencies. Frankly, it is with a great deal of difficulty that we come to talk to you about the performance of the Legislative Fiscal Office in attempting to find measures that are meaningful. I've indicated for you some output measures, those being within our office. One of the functions that we are required to do during the session is to write fiscal impact statements on all measures that have fiscal impact, including local government impacts. There will be in excess of 4,000 measures introduced in front of this assembly that my staff will have to review for fiscal impact. Of those 4,000 measures, they will write approximately 1,500 impact statements, meaning to say that some of the 4,000 have no impact, or some of the 4,000 are never scheduled for a hearing in an agency and don't arrive on our desk for workload. In addition to that, during the interim, as I've indicated to you, actually I don't think I did that previously, we are also the staff to the emergency board during the interim. That is one of the primary interim workloads of the agency. During this last interim, we analyzed and made recommendations on 441 requests to the emergency board for allocation of emergency funds or other actions of the board to adjust interim budgets. As our staff, in our staff role to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, we reviewed 81 requests to that entity. In our role serving the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, over the past several interims, we have performed between 5 and 10 audit or study reviews. And I was going to have the copy of them here. If you don't have them in your office, please contact us. The reviews have ranged all the way from brief looks at the fish and wildlife utilization of the enhancement account to a in-depth study of all of the programs that are engaged in the children's program. So a wide breadth of subject review, and both current and prior interim studies are available in our office on those issues. These, as I said, are output measures. You know, obviously we respond with these numbers to the number of bills introduced by the legislature, the number of bills acted on by the legislature, drive our workload. It doesn't speak to the value or to the actual effort level that go into those various impacts, because obviously, depending on the piece of legislation, they vary very significantly. Attempting to determine a true outcome measure as opposed to an output measure becomes more difficult for us to try to analyze. The first one that comes to mind is we do have a constitutional requirement for a balanced budget. And indeed, there will be a balanced budget. The issues are how good of a budget is that, how well understood are the implications of the various components of that budget, and the one that I know I lose sleep over is that when you sine die, is it indeed balanced, or do we discover somehow that, something was missed and that we are not in balance and, have the unfortunate requirement to inform you that, you need to come back in special session to truly make it balance. And I can tell you that that has not happened. You know, on an outcome side, there is a positive one. Another way that...
Before you leave that subject, would you explain to me just real briefly about balancing? We have X dollars coming in the form of tax revenues. We balance that. But we also borrow a lot of money, which seems to me to be an imbalance, even though we can afford the interest on it, but we're really spending more money than we're getting. So how are we balanced in that sense, any more than the federal government is?
Well, the balance is that you can afford to pay the debt on the debt that you issue, and that you use that debt to acquire assets that have a life beyond the period of time for which you are beginning to repay that debt. If you were to liken the state's balanced budget to a homeowner or to a, family's balanced budget, most people have mortgages on their home, and they do enter into debt, but they enter into a debt that they can afford the mortgage payment along with paying ongoing bills.
All right. I see. For 12 years, I didn't understand that that was the definition of balance, that we could afford to borrow the money. That we could afford to borrow more money than we receive in corporate and personal income taxes. That's it. That's the definition. And you say because, and one mitigating factor is that we purchase physical assets. I thought 80% of the money we spent was for salaries.
80% of the total state, the 80% factor would not apply to the total statewide budget because so much of the state's budget are transfer payments to other entities or to buying services, for example, through the health plan or senior and disabled services. Actually, I think in the state general fund, roughly 30% represents personal service cost. The others represent service and supplies and special payments. If you look at a school district's budget, for example, or my agency's budget, indeed, in my agency, 80% or more of my budget is salaries because I don't have special payments to school districts or to doctors and nursing homes. But if you look at the statewide budget, it is less than that. But I think this is a bit of a digression from my budget, and I'd be happy to have that, this conversation with you at your pleasure.
Yes, your caucus was at 9. You may be excused.
Thank you.
And you all have a caucus.
Right. Yeah, we can chat sometime. Right.
Okay. Okay, Mike. How much more time should we carry this over to tomorrow?
Your pleasure. I could probably do it in another 5 minutes.
If you do that, please. And the members that need to go to caucus.
I'm sure there will be additional conversations later, but I can get at least the record. There is another measure of outcome and that a lot of agencies or entities use, and that is user satisfaction surveys. We like to hear feedback about the satisfaction with regard to our services, but we're also cognizant of the fact that if we are doing a good job, on occasion we create an unsatisfied user. And what that unsatisfied user might be, the governor, it might be a state agency, or might be a member that believes our factual representation of something may have caused its failure or demise. So again, it's something that we look to see, but we also are cognizant and recognize that it may not be a perfect measure. So we're still looking for good outcome measures for the legislative fiscal office, and we would welcome your input and suggestions as to what they might be. Specifically, the governor's budget funds a current service level for the legislative fiscal office. including funding within the budget for the second phase of a performance audit that was mandated by the 1999 Legislative Assembly in Senate Bill 555, which is the juvenile justice enhancement package of last session. Overall, the budget represents a 9.3% increase over 9901 expenditures. That inclusion of the package to build in the second phase of the audit is $66,400. Exclusive of that package in the budget to maintain that activity, the budget increase would be 7%. A slight correction to the co-chair's comment earlier, the governor did not zero out the legislative branch's budget. Rather, he applied a current service level reduction to the branch, and in fact, he applied it all, I believe, to the Legislative Administration Committee's budget. We are separate entities within the branch, and he chose, for simplicity's sake, to isolate it all in one budget.
2.8%, is that what it was?
2.4%. If we were asked to bear our fair share of that 2.4% CSL reduction, the amount would be $88,172 would be our share of that reduction. Briefly, with regard to what are we doing in the area of information technology, we try to maintain and develop application software proficiency to stay on top of it. We have a current package of software tools on our desktops. Obviously, it's a never-ending issue to try to be proficient in the use of that rather than simply having it. We've tried to stretch into the area of GIS software systems so that we can also bring mapping solutions to you to represent a display of data in that fashion.
Mike, that's as to the technical understanding as opposed to the technical application of it. Is that right, of the GIS?
Actually, we have GIS software licensed for its use here, and I have a couple of staff who are proficient. I'd like all my staff to be proficient so that they can take, for example, data with regard to county experiences and be able to graphically display that on a map.
I see, and that's
but
to enhance the work.
It also relates to a knowledge and an understanding generally of technology as we analyze budgets where other agencies use technology, which is another issue for discussion.
Basically, to audit or to confirm some of the information that might be overlapping.
But I'm speaking now our own use of those application technologies.
Okay,
we have a website, and we hope you folks have all visited our website. We're trying to make that website more useful both for you and the public. We contain information on that website for committee agendas, for our analysis, for the minutes coming out of those meetings, as well as some broader historic information up there to assist you and the public. We're constantly trying to maintain it in a current fashion and to make it also bring the information that the users want and need. We are also assisting the Department of Administrative Services in building a new budget system that will replace the ABIS system. So these are the major technology activities that we are engaged in. With regard to the challenges that are facing the Legislative Fiscal Office, some of these have been spoken to, but I will just briefly touch them this morning. The office's role has really changed in the last 6 to 8 years under the term limit environment. Where that has changed the most is the office has become an educator of members in both the budget process as well as in the actual workings of state government so that members can understand the context in which they make these policy decisions and the budgetary decisions. With regard to that, we've also been cast into a broader role of communicating with the public. I spend a significant amount of time both during the session as well as during the interim conversing with the press, responding to calls from editorial boards that want to understand issues that are facing state government and get, again, a factual view of what the consequences of these various actions are. I believe that part of the problem that we have today is that there is a schism between the public's knowledge and understanding of what you do and what it is you do. And I think that all of the offices of state government, including the Legislative Fiscal Office, need to be more open to communicating what they do know about those processes in a manner that helps the public understand. Another challenge that we have, frankly, and this addresses, I think, the question you asked earlier, Representative Butler, is in providing the technical support to JLCIMT. This office has provided support to that committee since its inception back in the early 70s. It's always been a challenge to try to provide the kinds of budgetary, programmatic advice and analysis that our staff is quite capable of doing, but doing that also in conjunction with a technical review of the kind of information management project that are being brought forward to the committee. This last interim, we had a short period of time where I had the services of a prior DAS Information Management Resource Division employee to act as a consultant to the committee. That worked excellently for a very short period of time until he took a job with another state agency that created a conflict that could no longer allow that to happen. So one of the things I would like to see happen to increase the services of the office to the legislature is to provide additional technical advice, expertise to the office for the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management. Being able to support all of the assigned interim functions to this office is also another challenge. I spoke to you some of the workload indicators of our interim activity. What has mushroomed in the past several years is obviously our support to the Audit Committee. The Audit Committee, I believe, was created in 1989 session. The number of reports that have come out of that Audit Committee have increased virtually every interim since then. I believe the quality of the reports has increased every interim, and the usefulness of those reports to actually lead to legislative proposals for solutions has also increased. But all of that has come with a commitment of time of staff devoted to that. Support of the budget committees, support of interim committees in their review of the legislative holdback of appropriations, has all cost a diversion of staff. What it has meant is that effectively we are maxed out. It used to be historically staff had a little bit of breathing time during an interim where they could go out and get acquainted with their agencies and know how agencies were actually implementing legislation and budgets that were approved by the legislature. With all these other projects, trying to keep on top of what agencies are doing is becoming more difficult because we have less time available to do that. The other thing that's happening is that staff is working basically at a level that may not be quite as intense as the legislative session. It's not the 10 and 12 hour days, but they are 9 hour days. And what happens is staff are unable to even take their accrued vacation leave. So I have staff that are at the maximum of their leave where they are in danger of losing it during the legislative session because they were unable to take it during the interims. I have staff who take vacations during the interim, but they do so only because they come in on the weekends before and after they take their vacation in order to get their work done. So, it's a never-ending cycle. And what I fear out of that more than anything else is a burnout factor. That staff is going to reach a point where they're going to have to ask themselves, is this a fair balance between a life and family and other commitments? And I worry about that a great deal, which leads me to the final point about retaining staff. Now, compensation is not the only thing that keeps staff in a job. Enjoying the job, enjoying the people they work with, being challenged and having a great deal of professional freedom, to do their own thing are all additional elements that keep people excited about the work. That's why building that interim activity up to the level that it's become worries me, because if I am becoming uncompetitive on salaries, then it's the job environment that makes it competitive in terms of other jobs. And then if I lose that side as well, then I've got two hurdles to overcome. So I think maintaining some balance in terms of expectation during the interim is very, very important. And as the co-chair has mentioned earlier, staff retention vis-a-vis compensation is also a critical issue. The legislature responded in 1997 with additional staff positions in the legislative fiscal office, adding three more analysts, and frankly, I don't know where we would be today in terms of providing the kinds of in-depth analysis if we were dealing the deck around to three less players in terms of assignments. When I first took over this position, I think I spent virtually half of the first year recruiting and filling vacancies, both the new positions as well as turnover. I can tell you that since then, I've been blessed with not having a great deal of turnover, but I do believe we're at a point right now where the maintaining that status quo and retaining the very excellent complement of staff that is here in LFO today will be a challenge, because frankly, agencies view these people as a huge resource for agencies. And they do have huge war chests to come and bid.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions?
No, Chair. Just one question. So by point of clarification, we talked about it earlier, but so much earlier that I have forgotten about it, and that was, and I'm just quickly rehearsing it back into the statute, back into Section 173, the responsibilities, Mike, that we took over on Senate Bill 555 dealing with the audit, I know that goes above and beyond what previously had been the mission. Can you give us an update on how that is coming along, and whether or not that was a good thing to do as we look back on it, or what kinds of changes that you would see in the future? Is this something that we want to enhance with the appropriate fiscal remuneration, or do we want to stay away from it?
Are you speaking specifically of the outcome of Senate Bill 555 or our evaluation of it?
Your evaluation of it, sir.
Status report, we completed phase one, which was basically an inventory of programs. Phase two is going to be an on-the-ground review of the actual accomplishments in the various counties around the state. So phase two is really field work, and it is the evaluation effort. Phase one obviously was necessary to lay the groundwork of what it is we're looking at. Phase two is the answer to whether or not the measure produced effective results in terms of trying to divert youth from a life of crime to some alternatives. Do I think it's appropriate that the office be engaged in that? The answer is, of course, absolutely. I think having meaningful evaluation of what it is you do to guide you with whether or not to continue to place resources there is what we're all about. The real issue is trying to prioritize those kinds of requests along with all the other myriad of requests and the ongoing support of the Emergency Board and JLCIMT.
And kind of a follow-up, do you see that is a direction that the legislature would go in the future, directing through the Legislative Fiscal Office some degree of responsibility relative to this type of both office and then field work follow-up?
The answer is yes. when I look at legislation proposed this time, I can bring you probably a half a dozen mm-hmm. bills that would bring similar kinds of
request
responsibilities and requests to LFO.
And finally, you feel comfortable with that, Mike?
Well, I feel comfortable with the role. I'm uncomfortable with the expectation that we can fill all of the desired roles.
Well, certainly they would have fiscal impacts, each and every one of them, but I just wanted to make sure that you, as the legislative fiscal officer for the state, had felt comfortable with the legislature's request.
Yes.
For you to fill
it. I think it's an appropriate role.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate how hard you work and your excellent job and your staff. That will close the public hearing on House Bill 5025 and open the public hearing. Actually, as I stated before, Mr. Benjamin, the House has a caucus at 9, which the chair is not in control of, and unfortunately, we don't have a House forum to do a public hearing, but we will have an informational meeting, as I know you have folks here who'd like to testify and put things into the record on House Bill 2809. Lori, would you like to say anything first, or do you want to? Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chair, Senator Duke, my name is Meg Reinhold. I'm the legislative person for the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Good morning, Meg. Sorry you had to wait.
Oh, that's all right. Standing. HB 2809 moves regulation of pre-need funeral trust from the Secretary of State to our department. You may have heard there's been some previous issues with basically pre-need funeral trusts are contractual arrangements between funeral homes and individuals who want to pay for their funeral in advance of their death. So the issue becomes, how is the money handled between the time of the contractual arrangement and the death? And so what we've, an interim group of providers and funeral home people and Secretary of State and the Attorney General's office met and talked about some consumer protection changes so we can protect consumers from misuse of these funds by funeral homes in during this period of time. And it was decided that Department of Consumer and Business Services would be a better spot than the Secretary of State's office, since we do these sort of examinations and go out and look at people and examine their accounts, et cetera. So that's what we've done. It moves it over. The fiscal, we think we can absorb. We do examinations on a lot of different kinds of programs, as you know, and so we think we can absorb some of the cost, but it's hard for us to know how big of a problem it really is out there. So we've built into the bill the opportunity to do examinations of providers of these contracts with or without cause. And so we're really just guesstimating here on the fiscal, and we would use some of our existing staff to see how that works, and then maybe come back to the e-board if we do need additional funds. There's something between 250 and 300 of these providers out there, and most of them, the majority of them, are, you know, customer service oriented people. Obviously, you want return business, and there's no incentive to mismanage people's money, but there certainly are bad operators out there, and we'd like to go get them.
Okay, any questions?
Sort of curious. We've got a fiscal $114,000 and one FTE. Maybe that's one and a half, or one and a half. Anyway, if you're going to absorb it all, what are you doing here?
I may have misstated what we really will probably be absorbing is the examination element, the element of if there's an issue going out there and doing the field work. What we can't absorb is all the registration and the annual reports and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, that just paperwork that comes with registering 250 people, renewing, taking care of their annual reports, and taking complaints and stuff. Yes, and that's what this fifth was. We would have to charge a fee for that. Yeah, $250 per entity.
Will they pay something now? I mean, I can't imagine the Secretary of State's office doesn't feel free either.
Chair Carna, currently, I believe the Secretary of State charges a $200 fee. Is that right? Yeah.
So we'll raise it to $250. Okay. So you're here for a fee.
No.
As well as the right to send it. Okay.
No.
Got it.
Well, the clock thickens.
Well, CBS is always here for a few.
Okay, any further questions? We will carry this over till tomorrow when I hopefully have enough here for a work session. So, Megan, will you be on deck?
Always, at your disposal.
Okay.
Do we have four ways and means on Thursday? Do we then have subcommittees?
Oh, well, wait a second. Maybe we can't carry it over for tomorrow. No, we don't have full committee tomorrow, but Friday. Friday's full committee.
Yesterday, Lynn told me Thursday.
Well, let's see. Do we have anyone else in the meantime that wants to come up?
We have a state representative in the area.
Good morning, Representative King. Come on up, please.
Not sure what side of the table she wants.
Good morning, Representative King.
Good morning.
I've lost all my House members. Evidently, the Democrats and the Republicans have a caucus,
right,
and you must be out of your caucus sharing your time with us, and I appreciate
that.
I could
probably pull one or two out of my caucus to get a quorum for you. That would help you.
Well, had I known, I'd have said drag some folks along, but since you're here, we're just delighted you're here, and go ahead and put your name on the record for us and share with us your information.
Representative Al King, District 44. And I served on the interim audit committee, and the Secretary of State came forward with this issue. And unfortunately, I think it was understood that there was an agreement in terms of what could come forward in legislation at the request of the interim committee. But it turned out that there were some misunderstandings, and so as that committee came to its close, we weren't able to have some committee pre-drafted legislation, and so Senator Yee and I volunteered to carry forward and introduce this legislation and help shepherd it through, through the session. We did have some drafting problems early on in the session, so that's one reason why it's coming to us a little bit later than anticipated. We also did some additional work with a work group and came to agreement. One reason why I volunteered to do this project is twofold. I am an insurance licensed person, and also I wrote a book, Suddenly Alone, A Financial Guide for Widows, that addressed some of these topics. And it was my understanding that really the best place for oversight, is through the insurance commissioner, DCBS, that they're really best blessed with the oversight capacity and also the authorities, should any be needed, for that. Whereas the trusts that we're dealing with now are not insurance contracts. Some of the commitments that you make with the trust are very similar to what you need to honor in the event of fraud or financial reversal on behalf of a provider. And that those problems should not carry through to the consumer, a bereaved family, so that when they expect some services that they've paid for to be provided, that I'm sorry, nobody's home and it's nobody's fault here. Those things should not matter. We have had incidents like that occur in the past. The major incident, which my understanding could have been as millions of dollars, was resolved because a company that originally sold that business to the perpetrator was a publicly traded deep pockets entity, and rather than have the embarrassment, they just wrote the check and took care of the issue. Whereas that would not necessarily be the case in, on behalf of a mom and pop provider. In the insurance industry, there is no big trust fund out there of insurance providers for life health or for casualty insurance. The way that's provided is that if there is a default, that then all the other providers in the state, based on their proportion of premiums that they write in the state, for those kinds of policies, they have to step up to that responsibility and cover that obligation no matter the size of it. So that's how we in Oregon would resolve an insurance bankruptcy, where there would be, claims outstanding to be resolved. The insurance commissioner would oversee that. And so I think that that it would be fair to have a similar type of practice here, where if we have a number of people who are in the business of providing this service, one of their peers went under, that I think that industry, wants to maintain their integrity, the viability of their service and their clients, and that they, should collectively stand behind it as coverage of last resort. Certainly, responsible parties should be paid. So those are some underlying principles that were there in my coming forward, and I think that the Secretary of State, on the vision is correct, that they can do the arithmetic, but they can't, do any of the prophylactic anticipation, oversight, follow-up, enforcement. Those kind of functions are really not designed, for what they do. So that's why we carried this legislation forward. And that this now is, with the amendments that were here, I think that everything is, all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, et cetera.
Thank you, Senator. With me about this bill yesterday, and I appreciate you and her bringing the information forward to us, and she was very adamant that this was a good bill. Thank you very much, Representative. Any questions, Senator? Thank you very much.
Okay. Let me know if I need to drag any quorums.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Cindy, do you want to see him first? Put that one on the calendar?
I was going to say, Senator, you may not be aware. what have we found out, Lori, as far as tomorrow? We cannot carry it over till tomorrow. We need to carry it over till Monday. Is that correct?
Well, as far as there being a full session tomorrow, it would be in the afternoon. There is one.
In the afternoon.
So okay. Carrying this over would not conflict with this meeting time, but I'm not sure if we can carry it over if we're not in a work session.
Okay. We will try this again Monday then. So sorry, but we'll have to do it Monday, and hopefully they won't be having any more 90-head caucuses in the House. It's unfortunate for the chair and the meeting that we can't do any business without our House members. So we are adjourned. Thank you, Senator.